I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life, and, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now, on the Ice, on Minnesota's Sports Radio, 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
He heads back to the Oiler bench. We're watching Scandella. He's still on the bench. The Wild score. It was deflected in. Fontaine, who scored the other night, chips it off the board for Niederreiter. Koivu carries in. Koivu maintains the puck around Klefbom. Fire. Saves Kravitz. Niederreiter scores!
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is hockey time here in Minnesota. Once again, it's the On the Ice radio show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Along with David Helmer, I'm Pete Wagner. Chad Graff is soaring over somewhere in Saskatchewan, I would assume. Alberta, Manitoba. On his way back from Edmonton, he said he was going to be in the air. Got to give Chad credit. He was ready to record, David Helmer, a segment at midnight.
That's not bad. I mean, being on a three-game Canadian road trip and you're all over the place, and he's still ready to at least rock in some fashion.
Taking the show very seriously, which I really appreciate. And then we talked about going early morning, and I said, nah, just get on your plane and get your rear end back here. And the Minnesota Wild have a big game coming up on Sunday. They'll take on tomorrow the Dallas Stars. There's so many layers of this playoff race to get into. There's a great game coming up tonight, which is going to be the Outdoor Stadium Classic Series game between the Los Angeles Kings, winners of six in a row. They'll be taking on the now flailing and struggling San Jose Sharks. That'll be on national TV. Well worth watching for hockey fans. And I would assume that the Minnesota numbers for that will be very interesting. They should be very high, like they typically are for those types of events, especially Stanley Cup and that type of game as well. So it'll be an interesting breakdown for sure to see who comes out of that one. We'll get into that much more. Tim Kolomainen's going to join us for a couple of segments. Of course, we've got girls high school hockey, the tournament. That absolutely took a talking point last night with a big major penalty in the third period. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about the Hill-Murray Pioneers converting on the power play to propel themselves. Actually, a second straight state championship in the Class 2A. They will be taking on the Minnetonka Skippers, and then we are right in the crosshairs of sectional playoff hockey. Semifinals are in full force in most sections, a couple starting now, with quarterfinals today being Saturday, the 21st of February. So we'll have plenty of things to talk about there. And then, of course, Dave Helmer and I will take a look at some of the news and notes of the National Hockey League and a look ahead to the Minnesota Wild. So the first things first, the task at hand, the Minnesota Wild take on the Edmonton Oilers, the back end of a three-game road trip in Edmonton where they battled really a four-point effort. 4 out of 6 points were picked up by the Minnesota Wild after falling in a tough game to the Vancouver Canucks. Come back with an overtime win over the Calgary Flames. That with the Mikko Koivu overtime tally on Wednesday. And then they have the day off Thursday. Head off to Edmonton and pick up the 4-0 win. We're going to hear from Wild coach, head coach Mike Yeo. As you know, he's really talking a lot about Devin Dubnyk's efforts in goal and how much of an impact he has had on this team and why he is a good story.
I can assure you that there's a lot more to it than that. He's, it's been a great story, and he deserves, you know, people to be talking about him and writing about him. Just what he's brought to our team, the level of play that he's, been bringing night after night. Obviously, our season took a very big turn there when we acquired him, and he's brought a great sense of confidence to our group. Just a feeling that we don't have to play a perfect game. He's going to play solid back there. He's going to make some of the saves even that he shouldn't make, and just has a real sense of confidence and composure back there that's trickled through to the rest of our group.
it really has trickled through to the rest of the group, the confidence that they are playing with in front of him in the defensive zone in their transition game, and then offensively getting chances has been just fantastic. He only didn't have a lot of work, Dave Helmer, only 15 saves. It was, I don't want to say a sleepy night for the big fella, but, you know, when you're playing as much as he is, it's not bad to not see a ton of rubber either.
And he's done a really good job, and I really like how the defense has stepped up in front of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, last night without Spurgeon, you had to call up Christian Follin. And I thought Matt Dumba had a great game against Calgary. He did pretty good last night, and I kind of enjoyed that pairing of Brodin and Dumba a little bit. Two young guys that can turn it around on a team real quick and get it up the ice. And they provided a lot of action on the other end of the, on the other end of the ice. So,
it was a freewheeling hockey game. I don't think there were any penalties called in that one. No special teams. And, you know, Mikko Koivu after the game had said it was a little weird not having power plays and things to work with. But you know what, David, you bring up a very interesting point in Matt Dumba. They were talking in the broadcast last night about how Rick Wilson, who's a veteran coach with of Blue Liners, really gets the most out of his defenseman, was saying, you know what, he's a first-year player. He's a rookie, you can tell. But he also went on to say that it was really over the course of 38 games. That was just his 38th NHL game last night. He's really improved tenfold, and you can see his development on a almost a weekly, daily basis.
Yeah, he's getting better and better, and that's something you want to see with these young guys. And earlier on in the season, it was the problem. The young guys weren't stepping up, and you can't expect them all to do it all at once. And Dumba's taking a huge stride when we really, really need it.
Wait, and you know what else I like is that he plays with a little bit of edge. I know he had that fight in Buffalo, and, you know, that's the only one he's had his first in the NHL. But he's not the biggest guy, but he does play with a little explosivity. He's strong on the puck. He's not afraid to get his body in front of people, and he won't back down from anybody. That's important.
Yeah. As a defenseman, you don't want to back down from anybody. You want to stick with him. I mean, Brodin had a nice play, I think it was against Calgary, where guy was almost on a breakaway, and he just stuck with him, like fly-to-fly paper.
Yeah.
Would not move. He said, you're not going to get a shot off on my goalie. And I think that's helping Dubnyk out quite a bit, just saying, hey, these guys have my back. They're not going to let anything bad happen to me, so I'm going to give him my best as well.
And he's one and done. So when he gets that shot, that opportunity, he's gobbling it up. A player I wanted to mention last night was Jordan Schrader. I mean, he scores a goal, terrific feed from the left side on the tap in there. But he's been brought up. And in his last five games, he has two goals and four assists. He's been starting to pepper the score sheet a little bit. And the former Vancouver Canuck first rounder picks up a pair of helpers against the Canucks in Vancouver. I think he had a goal in Minnesota last week when they played against Vancouver as well. But there's a guy that's filling a void for a player such as a Matt Cook, who's hurt. And, you know, the Wild had a couple of key injuries up front when Carter and Cook went out, and they're still out, obviously, and going to be for a while. But it was a guy like Jordan Schrader, who is no stranger to the NHL. He's played his share of games coming into this this season, and had a decent run with Vancouver last year. But that's a guy that's quietly signed by the Minnesota Wild in the summer as a depth move. And we heard from Chuck Fletcher early on in the season on this program, you know, saying that those were the kinds of guys you do need to have because you are going to be injured. Jordan Schrader, you know, and there's also talk about Justin Fontaine, and, you know, he picks up two goals. I have always been a believer that that guy can do anything you want him to do. I watched him a lot when he was at UMD. He was on that high-end line that was so productive with Jack and Mike Conley. They won a national championship. He plays offensive hockey. He plays defensive hockey. He's creative. You want him on the end wall, he can do that. You want him to be trolling for rebounds like you saw when he got open in the slot area for his second goal last night. That's another player that, you know, the comparison between the Oilers and the Minnesota Wild was that the Oilers number one picks and you know, Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Yakupov and Taylor Hall and, you know, Jordan Eberle goes fourth overall, and their whole roster was full of labeled superstars, and they're young and they're still evolving. But the Wild, now Fontaine's like what, 27 years old, because he's about a 30-year-old senior. I'm kidding, but he's a little older. But as far as NHL game experience, this team is young. It seems as though the younger Wild players, such as that, have adapted to the NHL almost better than what the expected superstars, the number one overalls, have done in Edmonton.
Yeah, and it's huge. You mentioned Schrader, and when Zucker went down,
I panicked
a little bit because he was starting to score. He was really coming along. He made the offense click. And when he went down the first couple of games, we didn't seem to have it. It wasn't quite the same. And now we're getting Schrader in there. He's doing a great job making the most of his opportunity. And also Nino Niederreiter's back to scoring all of a sudden. That's good to see.
To your point, very interesting, because when Zucker went down, I agree with you. That was, he was nearing 20 goals on the season. And Niederreiter had cooled it off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So when he hit the shelf, fortunately for the Minnesota Wild, Nino Niederreiter was able to find the back of the net again. Now with 19 on the season after scoring last night, on his way to 20. I still can't think enough about that player. And when he had, what, 3 or 4 or 5 points in his career with the New York Islanders as a forward, not a defenseman. Maybe those are defensemen. I mean, that was in, like, what, 58 NHL games. I think he was a fifth-round overall pick when he was drafted by the Islanders not too long ago. And is it a case of they gave up on him? Who knows? Was it a case of that he needed a new scenery? Perhaps. But clearly, last year, he's proving was not an aberration.
Yeah, and he's getting back. I don't know if it was just having to play with the right guys, but he never seemed to get back on defense as well. His plus-minus was always down after the first few games when he was lighting up the scoreboard. And now he seems to be playing a lot better. He's playing with Mikko, who does so much for the team, and he's the captain. So he's doing what he should.
And he's been great. And you know, I think Jim Rich said it the best. I think, was it the Radioactive Sports we were on with Mike Morris earlier in the week when that topic came up? And I think I asked him about expectations of Captain Crunch, Mikko Koivu. And, you know, are the expectations different for him because he has the C? And what is it? And Jim basically said, look, he's been expected to be a number one center. He's been expected to be Steven Stamkos or Tyler Seguin or whoever it would be, a player of that type of offensive productivity. But really, he's not that kind of player. But the player he is does so many different things, and that's really who he is. However, that guy maximizes everything he has every night. And I've said it, now you've heard me say it here on this program, there is no more of a fierce competitor in that locker room than that guy.
Yeah, he does a great job doing what he's supposed to do in leading the team. He's not that goal scorer the way that you see Steven Stamkos out there. Everybody he plays with, when you interview them after a practice or anything, they all say it's amazing what that guy does for everybody else on the ice.
So I'm going to say this. Fortunately for the productivity that's coming out of him, that management makes those decisions of what he does and where he goes and not the stands, because clearly those have been some good things. Now let's check in with the captain right now. I mean, really, think about this. They picked up 10 points out of a possible 12 in two Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, West Coast swings or Northwestern Canadian swings. Very important.
Of course, you always want to win them all, but I thought we responded well to the Vancouver game, and obviously two huge wins. Teams that were chasing within Calgary, and these guys have been playing good hockey lately. So like Zach last time, it's not an easy trip to come out of with 4 points. So you won all six, but we're happy with four right now.
You do want all six, but you take the four. You're going to lose.
Yeah.
You're not. I mean, it's really hard to run any type of table, let's be honest, in this game. Nobody has. If it was easy to do, it would be done. So, and you look at the teams around the Minnesota Wild, and we'll get a little bit deeper into that in the final segment, and where they're playing and what they're doing. Somebody's going to falter here. And I think the best thing that could happen to the Wild when you start getting into those final playoff spots, you're dealing with Pacific Division teams who will eventually take turns beating up on each other.
Yeah, they're just crushing each other right now. I mean, you see how Vancouver and Calgary, they're all jumping up into the top three, and San Jose is just plummeting.
LA
is coming on strong.
They're scary.
All of a sudden. And this is what they do. They always seem like they're not going to make it, and then they just go on a big run. But I did hear interesting things about possibilities of trades for them to try and bolster their roster, which I don't
know. They've done it.
How can they bolster that?
But they do
Mike
it all the
Richards,
time.
Justin Williams, don't any of those names sound appealing to us?
Absolutely. Or you take, you know, they added Gabrick in there. What's going on with him? Is it another groin injury?
Yeah. It nags for years.
I used to work a theory that he had a crush on the trainer. You never know. Tim Colomine is going to join us as we have high school hockey coming up, the girls' state tournament. There have been plenty of talking points from the XL Energy Center as that tournament's unwinding itself into the final day, and it has been great stuff. So we'll talk about that in the next segment, and then we're going to transition to sectional hockey. So Tim Colomine is spending the morning with us. You're listening to On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Good Saturday morning. It's the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket, along with David Helmer and Pete Wagner. Our partner, Chad Graff, is in the air right now, flying back from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, as he will be preparing to cover the Minnesota Wild on Sunday as they take on the Dallas Stars. Mine is Tyler Seguin. Dave, did you see that hit on Seguin, that low low bridge, if you will?
I still haven't checked out the hit, and all I've heard, he was suspended 4 games.
Yeah, it's a pretty good suspension.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough, especially since it's their superstar.
Well, what was really weird is Jamie Benn, who was the Olympian on the Dallas Stars, referred to Tyler Seguin as their best player, being out of the lineup. So I thought, wow, this guy's checking the ego at the door, you know. But Jamie Benn, you know, you will be watching him tomorrow, has really elevated his game. That guy, you know, he, again, I don't want to say an out of nowhere guy, but they've got guys like that. That Dallas team in the race is another team that's going to be very concerning, as even without Tyler Seguin, they've been playing great hockey. So the goaltending, to me, still is an issue, whether they brought in Jonas Enroth or not. I think it's still going to be a problem.
Better them than us.
Better. Oh, man, remember, I was just like, I was turning cartwheels here in the studio last week. Whenever he wanted him here, you know, and, you know, Devin Dubnyk has been the story of the Minnesota Wild. His numbers have been absolutely crazy. We're going to get to Tim Colomine. I just got to toss these out. It's just been incredible what he's done. He's 21-7-3 on the season so far. He has a .938 save percentage, a 1.61 goals against average as a Wild goalie. He's 12-2-1, but 21-7-3. Think about this. If he continues to play this torrid pace and continues through to the end of the season, he'll be in the well in the 30-win capacity. You got to think this guy could be on the short list of Vezina candidates. I'm not kidding. Goaltender of the year.
Why not? I mean,
well, look at him.
He's saved a team and their playoff chances.
He has 5 shutouts with the Minnesota Wild. He has 6 this year. He had 1 with Phoenix earlier. 14 on his career. I mean, this is insane. I mean, it's impressive.
It was a hell of a pickup.
Oh, ingenious, and I was skeptical. I'll call myself out. I'm like, well, I watched him in Edmonton. I watched him kind of, you know, fall apart and then reclaim himself in Phoenix. I'm done second guessing. I'm out. I'll leave that to the football season and play calling.
Yeah.
Tim Colomine, good morning to you.
Good morning, Pete. I understand there's maybe a little bit of hockey going on around the state of hockey.
Yeah, I mean, it's swirling. I think that would be the term. And you were ensconced between the boxes at the XL Energy Center taking pictures for what's going to be a great Breakdown Sports USA girls hockey book. Is that in the books, or is that still in the negotiating phases with you?
It is still in the negotiating phases. However, you know, I just spent 2 days shooting photos at the girls state hockey tournament, so I would find that an awful waste of time if I wasn't going to plan on going ahead.
And if you're working a leveraged play, you just leveraged yourself right out of anything that you had there, my friend. So great job. So let's get to it. You know, let's talk first about the Class A. The championship matchup is set for today. It's the Blake School Bears and the Thief River Falls Prowlers. Thief River Falls enters the tournament as the number one seed in the Class A. That kind of got under the skin a little bit, I think, of the Blake Bears, as they felt like they were the number one seed. You've seen both teams play, and I think this is going to measure up at 4 o'clock this afternoon to be a very entertaining championship matchup.
I think so too. You know, I understand Blake's angle on that, you know, winning back-to-back state championships, going for a third in a row. I can see why you might think they deserve to be the number one seed, but anybody who's seen Thief River Falls play this year knows how dominant they've been as well. I mean, just look at the shots on goal. Did you see they had a state record? I believe it was 58 shots on goal in their quarterfinal win. And then they came back in the semifinals against South St. Paul yesterday and put 53 more on. So, I mean, 111 shots in two games for Thief River Falls. That's a lot of, there's a lot of talk about that defense, about how good their defense holds they've scored this year, but obviously they have some offense to burn out there,
too. Well, to the Thief River Falls case, Tim, I think they possess the puck in the offensive zone as well as any team in the tournament, A or double A. And they're doing it while they're cycling hard off the boards and they're getting shots, one shot, two shot, three shots. So they're not one and done with those 50 plus shots they're getting per game. They not only are getting chances, they're creating chances, but they're also doing it while possessing the puck 200 feet from their own net.
Correct. And I like what you say about, you know, not just getting the one shot on goal, but crashing, getting the rebound, that sort of thing. I mean, their first goal yesterday, Emily Berglund on the rebound, just 56 seconds into the game. That's a familiar name, right?
Absolutely, Tim.
Of Prowler's head coach.
Yes, Prowler's head coach Tim Berglund, former Washington Capital, and she is a very, very good hockey player, and we've seen her do a multitude of things. She can lug the puck, she moves the puck, she can score, she shoots the puck very well. Emily Berglund is, she caught my eye big time in day one. She confirmed it in day two, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she will bring for the Blake Bears in day three. Now, there's a lot of talk, and I think we gotta go there a little bit when it comes to the Blake School Bears. Obviously, they're a single A team. They're a two-time defending champions looking for the three-peat. They've won it 3 out of 6 years. I believe there was an article in the Hub talking about time to move up, that type of thing. And I think many people, myself included, believed they were moving up. And then there was a administrative scheduling deadline or something that was missed there. And you can determine what that means behind the scenes or between the lines, Tim. But the Bears are going to stay as a Class A team. And that has a lot of people grinding and gnashing of teeth. Tim, I think we lost you. I think we lost Tim, Dave Elmer. So hopefully he comes in. So nonetheless, it does come down to that. Can you try and get Tim back? It's funny. It's hilarious that Dave was going to go put together an audio bit for me, and he said, "Yeah, I'll be listening closely in case you lose Tim." Yeah, we lose Tim, and I'm like, "Ah, we won't lose him. We never do." And sure enough, we're going to have to drag him back on the line. But the story there with the Blake Bears, as I was mentioning, was, does it really matter that they're Class A or Class AA? They play a small conference schedule, which isn't very large in the IMAC right now. And then they play a non-conference schedule. Sure, they did win their opening round game by a score of 9-0, but everybody's, that's pretty consistent to what top seeds do in state tournaments, boys, girls, A, double A. That is just how it is. And then they win 3-0 for the third straight year. They beat Red Wing in the semifinals. Tim, welcome back to the show. Just basically was bringing up the Blake School going from Class A to Class 2A. And me saying at the end of the day, does it really matter?
Does it really matter whether they go A or double A?
Well, because they play I'm just saying because they play the smaller schedule in conference. They play a double A heavy schedule. They do get into the state tournament. Right now they're cycling and trending as a very good hockey team, but you know, I know it's a very explosive issue for many, but sometimes I'm right now today, it depends upon what side of the bed I wake up on. To me, does it really matter?
Well, I think Red Wing, you know, fans, players, coaches on Red Wing, I think they've lost, 3 years in a row in the state semifinals to Blake. They might be a little interested in having the Bears move up to double A, but, you know.
One of those in double overtime, Tim. I mean, let's be honest. And they've been very close, and they were a bounce away from moving on to the state tournament final. If they win that last year in that double overtime game, what a great team, which they still were. But the effort is even better. I mean, so I don't know. I wrestle with it. I mean, I get it. I get that, this whole recruiting discussion, you see that out there all the time. I don't believe a coach wakes up one day, Tim, and says, I'm going to go find me some players.
Yeah, and I think people play that recruiting angle up too much. I don't believe that there's a ton of that kind of stuff going on. I think from a small town perspective, and I grew up in a small town too, so I know all about this. I know what the people are thinking there. I think it isn't recruiting per se. It's just the idea that a private school, Twin Cities program, can draw from such a huge population.
But let's, okay.
Whether it's recruiting or not, the kids want to attend that school to play hockey.
On the same token, with the War Road Warriors, it was well known that people were getting jobs there, if you know what I mean.
And, well,
and I mean, come on, that's a small town about as far north as you can get in Minnesota, and it's the same thing. Was that recruiting, or what was that? I mean, it's I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't say recruiting on that one. I say what you've got is a very successful program where kids from outside that area want to come and attend that school and play for that program. And I think that's exactly the same thing, War Road, as Blake. The only difference is the population base there. But you're still getting the same thing. You're still getting kids wanting to move into that program and play. I read a story actually earlier this year, one of the War Road girls on their team this year, they finished just shy at Lost the Thief River Falls. But she's a Canadian, and you know, the family moved to War Road because they wanted to play. You know, she wanted to play high school hockey at War Road. So it's the same thing going on in both places.
Kind of my point. And, you know, are their parents out working it in the summer hockey? Absolutely. Are they saying, hey, you should come here? We work the hula hoop, get all the good players in one spot? Absolutely. And if anybody says it's not happening, they're kidding themselves. But what I don't believe is that coaches, whom you and I work with very closely and know, don't wake up in the morning and say, okay, you go get me three defensemen, a goaltender, and this player. I don't care which AAA or which summer hockey program you find it from. Get them, and we'll figure it out. I don't buy that. So,
I don't buy that either.
Bigger scope of things, remember the Holy Angels Stars were just running the show for boys and girls hockey in the Class A from 2000 to about 2005, 2006? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
They won titles in both boys and girls in 1 year. Remember that?
Yeah, I do. Yep.
Where are they now?
Yeah, exactly. At some point, you know, it became not as much of a destination program. And
thank you.
We've seen some new destination programs kind of crop up in the interim
so
here.
Ride it out. That's my call. My take. You're going to end up having, dynasties, if you want to call them that, and you're going to have other things. So anyway, the Blake School, Thief River Falls in the championship in the 2A. How about that, Edina and, Hill Murray game? A lot of discussion about that. It was a major penalty in the third period. Wow, that led to what would be a goal on the power play for Hill Murray, and they take the 2-1 win over Edina, advance to defend their second chance to win their second straight state title against Minnetonka. Tim, we're going to take a timeout, and I want to pick up that topic around the break, so stay with us if you will.
You got it.
Tim Kolomainen continues on the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Welcome back to the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Tim Kolomainen joins us from the phone lines. He, of course, from Breakdown Sports USA. He and I were at the Girls State High School Hockey Tournament. Tim, I was on the call for the Class A and AA quarterfinal round matchups. When I woke up, Dave Helmer, you heard the Peter Brady voice crack, time to change right there. When I woke up this morning, I didn't think there was any chance I could spit out two words, let alone one.
You know, that happens.
You know, your voice is just rocked.
It's shot. Feel.
However, Tim, Dave, I don't know if you heard it 2 years ago. Did you hear the play-by-play 2 years ago when the voice failed the broadcaster?
I think I have.
Exactly. It sounded like this. It's the greatest clip I've got. that was why Zeta wins the draw, by the way, if you're wondering what the... Why Zeta wins... Excuse me, the draw.
I got you excited there.
Yeah, so there you go. I thought I'd bring you into the real. Have you seen the mucus Mucinex commercials? I'm the guy that little thing comes up to during the movie theater for sure.
You're starring in them right
I've
now.
I've got that dry thing going on. It's awful. So, Tim, let's get back into it. Hill Murray, Diana, turning point, obviously, a major penalty called for head contact. You don't usually see that in semifinal-type games, right? And let alone a non-checking type of situation. So it ended up yielding a power play goal for the Hill Murray Pioneers, who won by a score of 2-1. And there were some quotes out there, obviously, as far as it was concerned. And both coaches, according to yourself, were saying after the game that neither one of those two players are really like that, and you don't need to make much of it. So why don't you share what was said after the game?
Williamson spoke just briefly about it after the game too. She just basically said she wasn't that kind of a player. And I mean, I suppose anybody who's seen her play in high school knows that's the truth. You know, that is not, there's not a history of that sort of thing. These two players did have a little dust up during the season too, but both coaches kind of downplayed that and said it really didn't have anything to do with this. You know, Hill Murray, Coach Bill Schaffhauser said, you know, it's unfortunate. I know both kids are of the highest character. I don't think there was anything other than a lot of emotion on the ice. So he kind of downplayed it. And then Edina coach Lotus Leminski said, you know, she said, I reminded Taylor that we wouldn't be where we are without her. You know, just so it was kind of just, I think everybody kind of considered it an unfortunate incident and just, you know, really bad timing for a great player in high school.
Well, and for those that didn't see it, obviously they came together in a big collision at center ice, and it ended up, about 15 seconds later, there was a turn back and a hit to the head, and next thing you know, it's a major. And, you know, there are people saying that should have been a game ejection, it should have been this, it should have been that. At the end of the day, it resulted in a five-minute major power play for the Hill Murray Pioneers. They get the result. Now, the dust-up you were referring to was when the two players came together, took Taylor Williamson out of the lineup with a concussion earlier in the year when they met up. So there's a little bit of history there, but an unfortunate situation, and clearly has been a topic of fodder. The message boards have been lighting up like a Christmas tree. I'm sure you've been on those. You love those things. I don't go anywhere near them.
Yeah, I like reading them, but I always take them with a grain of salt, that's for sure.
You
the name here, it was Hill Murray's Rebecca Zarembinski, too, that was
very good player.
Yeah, both very good players.
You, by the way, have a handle on those message boards, don't you?
You know, I do.
Like Puck Sniper 17 or something like that? Aren't you like Puck Sniper 17?
No, I think I'm just dueling 21.
Oh, I thought you were dangling twigs or something like that. I don't know. Okay. So, but you're out there and so you're very much a part of that process. Now, Minnetonka takes down Lakeville South by a score of 5-1. Kippen Keller with a couple of goals. Very good in that semifinal game where the Minnetonka Skippers and, you know, again, a team from Eric Johnson on down. I mean, his coaching staff and the environment he provides there, a school where a lot of players want to play hockey for Eric Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's another program too. And we talked about Blake on the Class A side, but Minnetonka has been just as dominant on the Double A side recently too. And here they are back at the state championship game for I think the fourth time in 5 years. So I mean, it's tough to do a whole lot better than that. And they come in as the number one seed again here.
They do, and I think that you have a game that's going to measure up. Now the question was Zarembinski's health. Where is she at? Do you know? Were you able to follow up on that in any way, shape, or form?
I have not heard anything on that one. I assume okay, and then we'll see her at 7 o'clock tonight, but I haven't heard anything specific on that at all yet.
Let's transition now. The boys' section hockey is underway, and we are going to have the Class 2A Section 6 semifinal from the Bloomington Ice Garden on these very radio airways tonight, which will feature the Wayzata Trojans, the number 3 seed, and the number 2 seed, Minnetonka Skippers. Tim, that is a game which is... It's got so many textures because which team is going to show up? Wayzata nipped Hopkins by a score of 1-0 with a goal with 1:10 left, and that broke my heart personally. And then Minnetonka gets past Armstrong Cooper by a score of 5-1, avenging an overtime loss to the Wings earlier in the year. So the Skippers and Trojans, though, we've seen the Skippers be world beaters, right? And then it's like, what is this game? What do you think we're going to see from Brian Urich's addition today?
We've kind of seen that from both teams, actually. Yeah. You know, Wayzata started off the year very well, ranked highly, and then kind of went into a tailspin for a while. And really, I don't know that they've come out of it yet here. You know, they were 6-1-1 through their first 8 games, and then they end up under 500. And then Minnetonka, exactly the opposite. They kind of started the year with, you know, they'd win one, lose one, all the way through the holiday break. And they beat Eden Prairie in the Schwann Cup Gold Division 7-4 on New Year's Eve, and that just kick-started about a 6-game winning streak for them. And you thought, oh, here we go. Minnetonka just shot up the rankings. And then they beat Eden Prairie again 4-2 on the 17th of January. And since that point, you know, they're 1-6-1 to end the regular season. So, I mean, I have no idea what you're going to see from either of those teams. They've been so up and down. I mean, these are two teams that you could see in the state tournament. And these are two teams that you could see just laying ahead here.
And the odd part, Tim, is it's two teams you could see in the state tournament, and one of them finished up the season 1-6-1. And it's like, oh, my word. Well, what do we have going on here? Now, Eden Prairie and Benilde played for what will be the rubber match the third time this year. Those two teams go at it tooth and nail. That will be a fun one at Braemar Arena at 4 o'clock. I may waddle my way over there to check that one out because that will be a game for the ages. So you might want to drive down and check that out. So be sure tonight to listen in. Bart Archer will be on the call with yours truly, 7:30. It'll be number 3, Wayzata, against number 2, Minnetonka, for the right to move on to Mariucci Arena, where they play in the section finals at 8:30. Let's go to your neck of the woods. The Section 8 AA, we'll talk about that one a little bit. As, you know, Bemidji has been the one that, if you saw our bits that appeared on the St. Paul Pioneer Press from Tim and I like the Bemidji Lumberjacks coming out of this one, and I think they have every reason to believe so on that one, too.
Yeah, they swept. Well, the remaining four teams there, we've got Bemidji and Brainerd playing at 4 o'clock today in one semifinal, and then Roseau is coming down to Moorhead here for a 7 o'clock game tonight in the other semifinal. And Bemidji swept all three of those teams this year. They did so in fairly easy fashion, too. They had to come from behind here in Moorhead in the third period. But other than that, they were really dominant, and they were really stingy defensively against each of these teams. None of them were able to generate much offense, and I think that's kind of their key here.
You're missing a key thing.
History working against them. It's been a long time since somebody other than Moorhead and Roseau won this.
But it hasn't been since 1986 that someone other than Roseau or Moorhead have represented Section 8. And it hasn't been since 1986 that the Bemidji Lumberjacks, who are 23-2, have been to the state tournament, George Palawa era. So that's interesting. But here's the thing. You've got the legend, Dave Oss, Mr. State Tournament, guiding that Brainerd Warriors ship.
Yeah, he beat your Buffalo team.
Sleepers. Boy, do I look like a fool. I guess if you dare stick your neck out, that's what's going to happen in the world of high school hockey. Let's move on now to the Section 2 AA. Edina plays Bloomington Jefferson at Braemar today at noon. And then it's Burnsville and Prior Lake. Dylan Lubsmeyer is one of your Brimsek finalists at Burnsville. They've got the goaltending to maybe get it done. When you look at Edina Bloomington Jefferson, I know as a fact the Bloomington Jefferson coaching staff said if you have to get through Edina, you want to do it on a regulation size sheet, not get to Mariucci. So they have their chance to play Braemar. I don't know how much they really that idea, but they're going to be playing Edina on Braemar Arena ice today at noon. I just think the Hornets are playing the best hockey of anybody right now.
I think so. I mean, it sure looks like a collision course between Lakeville North and Edina in that state championship game again. Both of them are just terrific right now and just rolling people. It's been fun to watch. I mean, it's been fun to watch if you like good hockey and if you're a fan of one of those two programs. Otherwise, you're kind of, you know, you're scratching your head thinking, okay, how are we going to get this done? But, yeah, that semifinal you just mentioned, Edina Jefferson won. I think it might be a little closer.
It always is.
Jefferson had a little dust up in their quarterfinal win over Holy Angels just the other day, too.
That was overrated, by the way.
Yeah, I saw the video of that. Just
what was that? Was that video? I mean, I've never seen a hand shaking video more than my life.
There must have been some pushing and shoving going on up in the stands or something too. Huh?
Well, you couldn't even see. That didn't look like anything to me. I'm not going to go there on that one. And the 1AA, Lakeville North takes on Rochester Century. And when you take the Rochester schools, you have Mayo, Century, and Marshall, John Marshall. All are capable of beating anybody throughout the tournament bracket, but are they all any of them really capable of beating Lakeville North? And are we on a collision course with Farmington Lakeville North or Lakeville North and Lakeville South in the 1AA final?
I'm not sure it matters, like you talked about earlier. I don't know if it matters whether you see South or Farmington in that final. I mean, obviously, we saw that, you know, the opening game of the season, Farmington took North into overtime and scored 5 goals against them. And, you know, everybody kind of said, here we go. You know, if North has a deficiency or as a weakness, maybe it's defensively. You know, they gave up 5 goals to Farmington. And since then, they have just shut people down. I think I saw in your article, fewest goals allowed in Class 2A hockey this year.
34.
So, yeah, I don't think it matters, to be honest. And against South and Farmington. Both had really very good years. But, I mean, you're going up against a juggernaut at this point.
In the 3AA, St. Thomas Academy and Rosemont, 1-4, 2-3, so the top four seeds advance in that 10-team section. Creighton-Durham Hall, the number 2 seed, and Eastview, the number 3 seed, going at it today at 4-7:45 all respectively at Veterans Memorial Civic Center. That, of course, I believe in Invergrove Heights is where we're playing that one out. That one playing true to form right now. Rosemont has the potential to surprise, but I don't think not today, but that could be a better game than one would think.
I'm kind of with you on that one, too. Lucas Gillette and the Irish there, I think they could do a little something against St. Thomas Academy. You know, make it a little tighter. You know, make them sweat a little bit. And that's the St. Thomas Academy team, too, that, you know, last year they got knocked off as the number one seed in that section. And, you know, maybe they're starting to feel the pressure a little bit. If Rosemont keeps that close for a period or two, you might tighten up a little bit and you might see something interesting happen.
In the 5AA, Anoka gets just past number 7 Rogers by a score of 3-2, and I've seen Anoka as a wild card, as a number 2 seed that could possibly get through. The Blaine Bengals playing some great hockey, defeated Coon Rapids 6-0 on Thursday. They take on Maple Grove, who just nipped past their crosstown rival, their youth hockey playing partner Osseo, by a score of 5-4. So again, 1, 2, 3, and 4 all alive in the section 5AA. In the section 4AA, they begin today. They always start a little bit later on that one in Aldrich Arena. By the way, we're going to have the 3AA and the 4AA final round matchups, the final round games, right here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. That'll be next Thursday and next Friday. Be sure to listen into that. We're going to have all of your coverage from high school hockey. We'll talk 7AA, Tim, next week, obviously, because we're out of time on this segment. But so much high school hockey to talk. I thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully we at least could scratch the surface, Tim.
I enjoyed it significantly, and I look forward to it next week.
All right, buddy. Have a great week, and keep writing away.
You got it, man.
I'm sure you will. More coming up on the Ice Radio Show right here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
My father was so funny because he would allow me to curse when I was playing hockey.
You just feel the tradition oozing.
When you're on that ice, you're a man. And men curse. Go ahead and curse, son.
Hands up in the air. Oh, my word.
It is a sexual experience to go to a hockey game.
The turnover from the slot goes 5 holes.
I had the most penalties on my team 1 year.
Gathers in a loose change.
Because people follow this puck with such passion across the ice. And when the goaltender makes a save, it's like, Especially when the goaltender makes like 3 saves in a row, it's like,
Quite impressive.
And that's going to put a wrap on this one.
I'm Pete Wagner. Good night, everybody.
Okay. I became part of that comedy bit. Can you believe that?
No way.
It's pretty true, though, isn't it? It is a sexual experience.
Yes. I still have a friend that laughs every time he hears 5 volts. He's 31 years old.
Here's the problem now. Now, every time I say that, I mean,
he's
going to
start giggling.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Well, that's a good start.
But that sums it up. The coverage we have coming up is going to be outstanding. Partnered with the MNHockeyMag.com. All of your tournament coverage can be found throughout the boys' high school hockey tournament. That's, you know, we're a week and a half away. We have the section playoffs coming up this week. A couple of games on Thursday and Friday. That will be some good stuff. One from Aldrich Arena, one from Ritter. I love calling games from that arena. It's a very tight, intimate vibe. It'll be packed. That'll be fun. That'll be the 3AA, and who knows who will be there, but that'll be a lot of fun. So be sure to check that out. And one of the sections we really didn't get into as we ran out of time was the Section 7AA, and the way it stands right now, Cloquet Esco Carlton came up with a big 9-4 win over St. Michael Albertville, and where the Knights were going to land this year was the big question. They were a 20-win team, and you know, people were, myself included, watching with the eyebrow raised, saying, is this team going to be for real? Are they ready? Was their schedule challenging enough? I guess not, at least not at this stage, as the Jacks, the Lumberjacks of Cloquet Esco Carlton, repel them by a score of 9-4. They will get a date with the Elk River Elks coming up today at Amsoil Arena, and then Grand Rapids and Duluth East. Wow, that's a game and a half. I'm going to take Grand Rapids in that one, and I think Elk River Grand Rapids are going to go at it in the section final at Amsoil Arena. If you ever want to get a quick roadie up to the North Shore, there is really, it's a lot of fun to watch those section finals. I know people from the Twin Cities that do travel to that Thursday night game, Dave. It's an awesome vibe. Have you been to the North Shore for any of those section finals?
No, I have not been able to make it there.
Well, I think you should. But, it feels like the NHL. It's unbelievable. It's a great deal.
Hockey games in general, it's one of the most electrifying atmospheres you can be in.
People, well, you heard the bit.
Especially here in Minnesota, state of hockey.
You heard the bit. Whenever there's a buildup or a possible goal, it's complete electricity.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at the National Hockey League. Couple things first. In the Western Conference, the Minnesota Wild now are really, Dave, it's been an inching process. I mean, this team was buried for a while there and have been so good. 8-1-1 over their last 10 and even better over their last 12 and 15. They have a couple of games in hand behind San Jose and Winnipeg. Should the Wild take care of business and win those two games in hand, they catapult both, knocking one of them out, no matter how well they do in the equal matched up games. So that's an interesting thing. If the Wild continue their trend with one game in hand on the Calgary Flames, they leapfrog them. Vancouver, they're right there, 2 points behind them. So really it's bizarre because the Wild are chasing Pacific Division teams for the wild card. Then behind them, they have another Pacific Division team, the Los Angeles Kings, winners of six straight. Mentioned to them in the onset of the show that they are taking on San Jose and the Outdoor Classic. Got to watch that tonight. That's going to be a lot of fun. And what is it, 8 o'clock our time? But then Dallas, they just lost. Colorado is starting to fade. They're starting to dribble their way back into the Arizona-Edmonton, we're out of it phase.
Coming back from back down to reality from last year's just...
And it's been an absolute emotional roller coaster, and I've said that is the way it's going to be with Patrick Waugh at the helm all the time.
Just up and down.
That team is just going to be flying and sinking, and it's you watch, and that ship will sink eventually, and they're going to have to make a change.
Not,
I'm making the call right here.
Not being able to hold on to Stastny, I think, has really hurt them quite a bit because they fit that first line. That it just looks so good.
Where would they be without Jerome Iginla? I mean, he's saved them right now. The
they
fossil.
Would be cellar dwellers.
I mean, the guy is aged and he's still getting it done for them. And his numbers are very impressive for a man his age. And he's come in and has been a key factor. But at this point, I got to say the Colorado Avalanche are non-factors in the playoff race. Just too many teams that they have to leapfrog. And we'll see if they're going to be sellers coming up. The other factor I wanted to mention is Chicago Blackhawks are sitting with 75 points right now. The Minnesota Wild with 67. If the Wild win their game in hand on Chicago, they're trailing them now then by 6 points. That suddenly makes things quite interesting there. That's a third place and an automatic berth.
Moving up and possibly getting into that top three would be huge.
To me, it was an expectation coming into this season.
Yeah, I expected to be in the top three. Even with this tough, tough division of the Western Conference, I still expected to be right up there with St. Louis and Chicago were my predictions.
But none of us expected the Nashville Predators to have 84 points, 39, 13, and 6, and be leading the Western Conference and just running away with it. I mean, that I think many of us felt it would have been St. Louis, Chicago, Minnesota.
Yeah, and you mentioned Nashville, and I just want to ask you, how big of a difference is coaching when it comes to like Nashville and Vancouver? They made changes, and what has happened this year that made everything click?
It's really odd, and that's a really good point. And I think David Poile, their general manager, who was Team USA general manager for the Olympic team, gets a lot of credit for Barry Trotz was a legend. He was the only coach that team had known over the course of time. Mm-hmm. It was time to cut ties. I mean, he brought them to incredible levels. Terrific, right? But at some point, I think it was time to move on and time to say, okay, time for, it's kind of the Guardy effect for the Twins. Great
change
manager.
For the sake of change?
Sometimes you have to. And Peter Laviolette comes in, and from Carolina, we know the cup there. And then he goes to Philadelphia, which I think is a no-win situation for any coach to coach that team. I mean, it's borne itself out for almost 30 years. That's a job I just would never want. You get gobbled alive. But I do think guys become better coaches after that. And Peter Laviolette settling into the Music City in Nashville, just getting it done and that team. But the moves that they've made and the players they have, they always have these guys. Again, you look at this team and you say, Where did he come from? Philip Forsberg could be the rookie of the year, the Calder Cup winner. So all the right buttons have been pushed, and the job and the environment that's been maintained. And it's interesting. St. Paul native and former Stillwater High School coach Phil Housley wanted to take the Florida Panther job, which is now held down by Gerard Gallant. By the way, I'll get into him in a minute. Love that guy when he was with the Red Wings. But Housley was held on. So Barry Trotz was allowed to go, but Housley was not let out of his contract, and now he's on LaViolette's staff. He does want to be a head coach. He does want to win a cup as a head coach. He's stated that clearly. But the not allowing him to move says two things. One, that he's valuable to the Nashville franchise. Two, he's a great coach. And three, David Poile knew a great thing when he saw it.
It's just amazing. When you come in, and obviously you have the monster in net. That's what I call him, Pekka.
Pekka.
He's a big boy, and he gets the job done. I think he's been one of the better goalies in the league for a long time, but all he's had in front of him is Weber. And that's essentially it. He's had a couple other decent
and Ryan Suter,
there.
But that was the early part of his career.
Yeah.
I mean, early part of Pekkarinen's career.
Yeah, and now he's doing great. Everybody's playing together. They're doing really good. I did not expect them to be the top seed overall in the Western Conference, of even Eastern Conference. If you put them in there, I wouldn't have had them in the playoffs.
What a great story in the National Hockey League. You know, Nashville has not been a dismal franchise by any stretch of the imagination. I'll maintain that of the four teams that were cousins that came in the same time, Atlanta, now Winnipeg, Nashville, Minnesota, and Columbus, they have had the most playoff success and the most long-term success. Minnesota probably financially has been the best out of all of them. And they've had probably the next best success of any of the playoffs with those teams as well. But you got to tip the cap there. When you look ahead, are we done?
Yeah, time flies, doesn't
what?
It?
What?
We just have a minute left. So make it count.
Dallas is on the docket tomorrow. Edmonton Oilers come back in town on Tuesday. Two big Western Conference games. Then those Nashville Predators. Be sure to check out that game Thursday night. That's in Nashville. Then they're at Colorado right after that on Saturday. So there's four games coming up this week that are all huge. The scary one is hosting of the Ottawa Senators. I like that team. And that's another one of those kind of Florida-Carolina games, no rivalry, but good hockey clubs that could scare you. By the way, Gerard Gallant on that topic, the best goon and goal scorer, I think, next to Bob Probert in the history of the National Hockey League. Dave Helmer, thanks for the great work.
Yeah, no problem.
Tim Kolomainen, our guest in the midsection of the show. I'm Pete Wagner. Enjoy your puck. So long, everybody.